Okay, so we have very packed Aliyos in front of us, especially the Sheni of Parshas Kedoshim, but also the Sheni of Achrimos. So first we'll just say some brief words about the Achrimos Aliyah, and then move to Kedoshim and see how much we can cover in the time that we have. So Parshas Achrimos, in the beginning, is talking about the Avodas Yom HaKippur, the subject of Daf Yomi now also, so there's a little synergy on that front too. And here, this Aliyah, talking about the two Seirim, we have the Seir LaHashem and the Seir LaAzazel, a very, very challenging concept to try to understand. It seems very unusual for us, the whole idea of the Seir LaAzazel, the scapegoat, given the terminology to the English language. A lot that's very mysterious about this Aliyah. Just to begin with, so the Parsha, the Aliyah begins talking about taking the Dam HaPar, Dam HaSar. So you have the blood of the goat and also the blood of the par, and it is brought together. So the Gemara Maseches Menachos and Daf Chafez Menalos note that apparently, despite the fact that you're going to have more blood from the par, it doesn't create the bittel. So here's another Yoredei reference. We've had a few Yoredei references in the Sheni of the past few parashios. Here's the other one. What about the halachos of bittel, which is going to have a larger amount of one than the other? So isn't that going to cancel the other out? So the third Tanima suggests that this is reflective of the fact that kudshin has its own chashivas, has its own significance, suggested by the language of the Gemara Maseches Tura, the Fayim Beis, the Kodeshe. And also there is a factor, as Ruth explained, that you have here lach balach, you have here two wet substances, nimamino of the same type, so you don't have a bittel there, so dam and dam is not going to be the bittel. The Gemara and Yuma emphasizes that they are actually mixed together as a part of the point. The Paris Yosef understands the imagery there, that if we're looking for a mechila, we're looking for a kapara, so then the big has to be ready to be mixed with the small. You're not looking to stand out with your ego and your chashivas, but you're ready to, first of all, join the whole people, and to sublimate your ego even to those who perceive as less than you. That's a big part of what creates the kapara. And that's a part of the imagery. Okay, so the Seir LaAzazel is sent, after it's prepared, it's sent with the Ish Iti. So the Ish Iti is an interesting phrase. What exactly does that mean to connote? So the Radak understands it means that he's somebody who travels a lot at all times. So therefore, he knows the path. He knows how to get around. He doesn't need Waze. He doesn't need a GPS. He's holding very much in all of the roots. Other interpretations, like the language of Yerushalmi, is to understand that it means someone who is prepared. And the Pasuk in the Gilas Esther has a usage along those lines. And the Gemara has a drasha that means that you're going to go under all circumstances, no matter what. So a filu of the Shabbos, a filu of the Kuma, whatever it is, this is going to happen, this mission takes place. All kinds of leniency is actually theoretically allowed to eat on Yom Kippur in order to make sure he can carry out this mission. They had food stationed around to sustain him. The whole discussion is not only mission to Kuach Nefesh or even without that. But this mission is given great importance. The whole discussion of Sarah based on various details here, whether this has a status like a korban, a different type of process in some ways, some of the halachos do overlap with Karbanos. Some of them seem different. And certainly the whole imagery here is different. It sounds like, obviously this is not the case, but the language is Seir LaAzazel, it sounds like you're offering something to the forces of evil. Clearly that is not what our religion is all about. So to understand exactly what the imagery is here, there are many different suggestions. Shmuel Golden, wrote an article about this for a volume, Bitoch Oel, which we published a volume many years ago, many different essays in various parshas of Shavuot. So in that volume, the Golden Survey, a lot of the different explanations that you find in the Rishonim and in later Svarim as to the imagery of the Tzir La'Azazel, the Rambam understands in the Mor Nebuchim that it's supposed to create a picture of distancing your sins, similar to what we have for Tashlich. When it comes to Tashlich, we don't really believe that we are throwing away our sins physically into the river. We're meant to have that visualization so that we actually do it in the genuine sense. So here too, we want to push ourselves to genuinely distance ourselves from our actual averos. So we have this symbolism that that's what's happening, and that that will hopefully bring that about. The Sava HaKabbalah understands that the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, so they used to worship goats or demons that were in the form of goats, so we're getting rid of that. So there's a little synergy here to the Korban Pesach, where we have that idea that we're actually destroying the Avodah Zarah itself, and maybe that's what we're trying to represent here. The Kedus Yitzchak, the Abarbanel, they emphasize the fact that here these two goats, Seol HaShem and Seol HaZazel, are identical and supposed to represent twins like Yaakov and Esav. They look the same, but nonetheless, their internal character is what's definitive, and they have a very different fate and a very different destiny, and that's what we're trying to direct our attention towards. Kushner has essays about this, and the Pachar Yitzchak about the whole notion of Adwa Yada, and about how sometimes things can be very similar on the outside, but very different on the outside, and that's a big part of the imagery of these two Zirim. And that's also something that we have in mind. Rav Shmuel Saul Hirsch, along similar lines, so he suggests that therefore this is supposed to represent the whole notion of free will and our ability to choose one path or another, and our need to choose one path or another. And that's also incorporated here into the Avodas Yom HaKippur. Okay, so just giving that very brief attention so that we can give more time to the very dense content of Parshas Kedoshim. So here in Parshas Kedoshim, we can really link the two. We just said that the purpose of mixing the dam to emphasize the kapara that comes from unity and that comes from seeing yourself as a part of the klal. And Parshas Kedoshim really is very much about that. Parshas Kedoshim is about the mitzvos, but much of it is about the mitzvos that bring us together as a people and that connect us as a tzibur, and about what we can accomplish through that. Saul Bechik observed, also an article we talked about, if I remember correctly, by Nachum Ganak wrote, in the name of the Saul Bechik, that what you find a lot of in Parshas Kedoshim is the same kind of themes that you find in the Aseret HaDibros, but taken even further. And we'll see some examples of that in the Saliyah, but that the idea essentially is that there are fundamentals that the Aseret HaDibros represent, and Parshas Kedoshim, which is addressed to our tzibur, is addressed to our vision of the community, shows how the responsibility and the accomplishment is even greater when we see ourselves in that framework. And indeed, in this Saliyah specifically, we'll see a couple of examples of that. That's just something to keep in mind as you look at some of these very, very, very impactful psukim. So we really have to make some triage as far as how much we're able to highlight about some of these ideas. So first, to start off, the pasuk here, this is Perek Yates, pasuk Tet Vav, Losasu Ovel, Bamishpat, Losisa Fnedal, Losedah Fnedal, Besedah Kishpat Hanifach. So we have to be very careful judgment. And this is probably also very powerful in light of current events. America was very focused this week on a verdict and a trial which is understood to symbolize issues beyond itself, and that creates a great pressure to not focus exclusively on the details of a specific circumstance. And justice requires that that's what happens, that we look at the actual facts in front of us and come to a conclusion that is fair to that. And here the Pasuk of Osasu Avo B'Mishpat, we have to be very careful not to allow any kind of a distortion in justice, and that can come from a lot of places. Losisuf Neidal, Losedif Negavol, that you might think, okay, here's a person of a monetary case in front of me, so here's somebody who's poor. I have to try to have rachmanis on him. I try to have to skew the ruling so that he'll be able to benefit from some extra assistance. Or lo sedef negadol, there's somebody here who's very distinguished, very prominent, and if he's going to lose, it's going to be a big rebellion. It's not going to be proper. It's going to hurt him more to lose than it would hurt the less prominent person. It's not going to be as much of an embarrassment. So maybe I should factor that in. So we're told that we're not allowed to do that either. It's interesting because there is a kind of a very subtle line. On the one hand, that the justice has to be pure. It shouldn't be affected by factors like this. But there are factors that actually do go beyond the letter of the law, but still impact the justice of the situation. And that's where we have the notion of l'fnim m'shuras hadin. And that's also a suggestion here that the Pasuk is saying that at the same time, that you have to make sure that whatever the mishpat is, it should not be skewed. It should not be taken off course because of whatever attitude you bring to it. So you have to be faithful to the letter of the situation in front of you, and also make sure that you are cognizant of the whole totality of the picture, and make sure that what emerges is justice. It's not easy. It's not something that is simple. It takes a lot of careful attention and a lot of respect for all of the values that are contained within. So here the pasuk ends with maybe on the one hand a reiteration of the same theme, but besides that, tishpoit amitzecha, that you should judge your fellow with justice. And here in Chazal you find at least three interpretations is telling us, and they address three different populations. And the last one that we'll say is the one that's most well known. So it could be addressing those who have the potential to be dayanim, to be judges. Sometimes we just said that it's very tricky, it's a tremendous challenge to be able to pull off justice in a successful way. It's a tremendous achrayus, and who would want to do it? But on the other hand, society needed it. So we need people who are capable and who are fair and just to be able to take on that role. So one interpretation Chazal has is that that's what the Pasuk is saying, the Tzedek, Tishpot HaMitzecha, that you should judge and you should take on this mantle and do what's necessary to bring peace and to bring justice to society around you. The other possible interpretation, the second interpretation, is that it's referring to people who are active, ready in judging, people who are in the process of adjudicating, and they have to do so fairly. But tzedek tishpot hamitzecha, that they shouldn't create a scenario where not only that their conclusion should be fair, but they have to also take control of the environment and make sure that it doesn't favor one side or the other, or give the appearance of favoring one side or the other, which itself is going to bring about a kilkul and din. So even if you think you're fair, but you let one side talk longer than the other, you tell one side he can sit comfortably and the other side he's got to stand up while talking, you have different types of treatments for the two parties, so that's going to create an unfair environment, and that's also going to create an unfair result, and it's going to inhibit each party from properly defending themselves and advocating their position. So when we talk to somebody who has agreed to take on this job as being a dayan, we still have to instruct him to do so b'tzedek, to do so in a way that is fair and that is just. But the most well-known interpretation really applies to all of us every day, and that is tzedek tishpot hamitzecha, the way the Mishnah of Perkei Avot has it, the part of Masechta Shabbos. That we have to bring a favorable judgment. to how we treat people. And this is an incredibly important idea and an incredibly difficult idea. It's hard to do. It's also even hard to define, because it doesn't mean, presumably, that we should fool ourselves in ways that don't make sense. There used to be an expression in Europe that say you have to judge favorably, but you don't have to be a fool. So what exactly do we mean when we say that you should evaluate things with a favorable light? What exactly does that ask of us? That asks us to stand on our head and to try to give interpretations that don't make any sense. And certainly, we're not supposed to put ourselves at risk, or put others at risk. It's very easy to make a mistake in that direction and to be too generous in judgment, so that we allow dangerous people to continue threatening others and threatening ourselves. So there's no question that that's not going to be what we're talking about. So assuming that we're not dealing with situations of risk and harm, so what do we mean when we say judge people favorably? So here there is a lot to try to explore, and the Rishonim and the later Sfarim have worked to try to define parameters. So for example, the Minyon and the Shari Tshuva, and also the Chafayim and the Sefer, give some categories as to what it means, how do you assess different situations. But just to speak very broadly, without going into all the details of that, but if you have somebody who's known to be a righteous person, and they are behaving in a way that could be interpreted either way, could be interpreted positively and negatively, let's say, roughly equally. So in such a situation, you have a situation that could be interpreted either way, and the person who's doing it is known to be righteous and has a spotless reputation. So what would you say in that circumstance? Does Damach HaTzvot apply? So the answer was probably no, it does not apply. Because you don't need Damach HaTzvot for that. That's just simple fairness. That if you have somebody who has behaved properly in an exemplary fashion his whole life and does something that could go either way, so it's simple fairness to assume that he has a right to his reputation. You don't need a pasuk for that. You don't need to be told whether you're machriya l'chatzchus when the person has earned that with his behavior, and that's simple fairness and justice. And very often that gets forgotten also. There is such a rush to judgment sometimes nowadays. Anytime anyone raises any suspicion about anything, anyone says anything about anybody on social media, something that's not immediately obvious what was going on, but people feel it's a mitzvah right away to bring in their comments and judge without knowing the whole totality of the situation. And first of all, it's very unclear why they feel that this is something society needs from them so much that they should be weighing in immediately. But aside from that, the whole notion of a cheskes kashrus tends to go out the window, and that's simply not just a violation of Damach HaTzvot, it's a violation of simple fairness and basic logic. That's certainly what you should expect. If somebody has earned a spotless reputation, so then that should certainly direct how you interpret what you don't know. And even to go beyond that, the Gemara actually says that even if you know that somebody is a Talmud Chacham, even if you know that he did commit an Avera, so we should assume that he would do tshuva. That's also a part of his character, so nobody's perfect, everybody makes mistakes. But even if you know it's a mistake, you should assume that they will do tshuva. Here again, I should emphasize, we're not talking about allowing any situation of endangerment to continue. We're talking about an Avera that will cloud your opinion of someone. So we do believe in tshuva, and that's also a part of a person's character. So the Gemara says that that you shouldn't assume that they haven't repented, and the Gemara has that language, Shema as the tshuva, Vade as the tshuva. Maybe they did tshuva. They definitely did tshuva. So the somewhat cynical interpretation of that Gemara is Vade as the tshuva, the Tamachachim definitely wrote a tshuva saying it was mutter, whatever it was. But even that's part of the Damach HaTzvot, in a sense, part of the favorable judgment, to understand that people have their beliefs and their perspectives as to why they do what they do, and it's also a part of understanding it, even if it's not necessarily correct, even if it's somewhat of a self-illusion. But appreciate that that's also a part of humanity, and hopefully people do tshuva, people come to correct their So what about somebody who's not as obviously righteous, somebody who has more of an average reputation, and the behavior is a little murky, it could be interpreted either way. So there you have more of a relevance to this idea that the basic math comes up to 50-50, that there should be a generous tilt, that we should be, Dam v'chatzos, we should work under the assumption that there is what which we don't know, and that there is more to appreciate in their attitudes and their behavior. And on top of that, so you could have somebody who is not so known to be righteous, and is doing something that looks pretty suspicious. So does Dam v'chatzos apply there? So here, if the facts really add up in a very negative direction, so then we don't have a mitzvah of judging that favorably. That's pretty much how everyone agrees. The interesting question is, maybe you're not obligated, but maybe it's still something to aspire to. Maybe under the category of WWCCD, you know, what would Chofetz Chaim do? Okay, so maybe I wouldn't necessarily have the instinct that this could be interpreted positively, but if I was on the level of the Chofetz Chaim, would be saying this is something to aspire to. Even when it's very difficult, maybe I should still try to push myself to see it positively. So here again, if you like to keep emphasizing, and this is point, that certainly not in any way that will allow any dangerous situation to continue. But when it's possible, if you really are creative and you really stand on your head and you can find a way to express a generous judgment, so is that something that's worth trying? Is that something that you should do? So there are various perspectives on this, and it may actually go to the question of what is the purpose of Dam v'chatzos? What are we trying to accomplish? So the truth is, there are different perspectives on that. So the probably more intuitive perspective you would have is that Dam v'chatzos is really about social harmony, and that when people are suspicious of each other, so that tends to make society very tense, and people can't get along. They're very offended at being suspected, and it makes it very difficult to have a peaceful environment. While if you extend generosity of judgment, so that is something that people appreciate, and that is a big social lubricant that allows people to get along in a much more positive way. So maybe that's the goal, and in that sense, say if your aim understands this to be a detail, we'll talk about soon, say more in that context of the Ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha, that this is essentially a mitzvah ben adam l'chavero, that is how you would want to be treated for sure. You would want to be given the benefit of the doubt, so you should also extend it to others, and it contributes to a peaceful society. So maybe that's what we're looking at here. It's probably the more intuitive approach. But there is also another mahalach, another way to understand this, Yeshua Leib Diskin. That's a tshuva about this. Yeshua Leib Diskin was known as the Brisk Rav before the salvation. Brisk came to the early Yeshuvim in pre-state Israel. Just went to my great-great-grandfather was a Talmud of Ma'aril Diskin. So the Ma'aril Diskin has the tshuva, also reprinted the paper Ma'aril Diskin al Torah, that the idea of Dam v'chatzos is really something that you do for your own sake. That as you strive to be a person of righteousness, so it's very important that you believe that the average person around you is also trying to be righteous. Because if you think, well, nobody's honest and nobody cares and nobody tries to help anybody else and everyone's just thinking to themselves and they're just trying to get ahead no matter what it takes, then you're not going to feel very motivated to feel differently yourself. But if you have the belief, extent that it's reasonable, you have the belief that society as a whole is striving for a higher standard, it is trying to be honest, it is trying to be concerned about others, it is trying to be compassionate, so then you will feel that that's also something that you need to strive for yourself. They did studies, actually, that when they want to try to inspire a certain behavior in the population, whether it's recycling or getting up after yourself, or maybe now getting vaccinations, whatever it is. So if people people are worried that not enough of the population is complying. So sometimes you try to scare people and you say, oh, 75% of people haven't done this, so you have to help and you have to start taking care of this. You have to start recycling, you have to get a vaccination, whatever it is you're trying to push. So then it ends up backfiring that way, because when you emphasize that, most people or a lot of people aren't doing the right thing. So then people get the impression, okay, so I don't have to do the right thing either. But when you come from the opposite angle and you say that most people are doing this, you should do it too, so then it actually ends up having a much higher success rate. So here also, that's a little bit what Mariel Diskin is saying, that people are influenced by their surroundings and they're influenced by their perception of their surroundings. So if they tell themselves that people are not really working to try to do the right thing, they're not going to really work either. But if they believe that the average person is trying to adhere to a higher standard, so they'll also try to live up to a higher standard. So that could have a number of nafkaminas, these two different understandings. Just to mention briefly a few of them. You know, the question of the issue we just mentioned, so is this something that you do for the others and to try to add extra pieces to society, in which case maybe you have to push yourself to try to see something positive in an individual who's really not so upstanding. It might still be worth it. Or if it's about social standards, that once somebody is already understood to be not so righteous, so then to try to justify or try to kind of clean up the image of their behavior is not going to be a good thing. It's going to give that behavior a greater influence and greater impact in society. So then the balance is going to come out differently. It also affects the question of what about people who don't care how they're judged? So maybe there's less of a verad mechavero, but it doesn't change the fact that it impacts society, and adarabba, it's going to have maybe even more harm to society, letting that judgment become the standard. And it's also something that perhaps is reflected here. Also a question, some talk about, what about things that aren't a matter of righteousness, but they are a matter of social harmony? So for example, if you invite someone to your party and they say they can't come, they're sick, and you say, oh, I think he's probably not sick, he probably just doesn't like me. So is that an issue of damachasos? Not necessarily a factor of righteousness or morality, but it is going to affect your ability to get along with them and your harmony. So maybe we should say that even in areas like that, we should have an inyan of Adam v'chavchus. So this affects a lot of areas of life, and it all connects to this pasuk, which we saw has implications for average people, and also for dayanim, and for potential dayanim. And, sorry about the noise in the background, can you hear me? So it has implications in all these areas, but it also highlights the fact that the judge is a professional, so to speak, is taking on a particular role within society, but all of us are engaged in judgment all the time, and every day we're engaged in judgment, and the same type of principles that affect how a dayan has to be careful, they, in spirit, apply to individuals as well. And while we don't always have the same kind of high stakes, but still, we don't always know what the stakes are. We don't always know the impact of our careless judgments of others. And it's important that we try to bring judiciousness and care and thoughtfulness to how we evaluate all the seemingly mundane situations of life. And very interesting also that commentaries on Pirkei Avos with this Mishnah appears. So many commentaries all hit on the same point. They all notice the same view that the language in the Mishnah is Hevidon is called Ha'adam L'chaschus. You should judge all of the person L'chaschus. So why do you have that language of Ha'adam? So many suggest that the idea is that sometimes you'll look at something and you will think that this is not really subject to any positive interpretation. There's no way to put a good spin on this. And that might be true. It might really be the case that what you're looking at is a problem in any interpretation. But it doesn't necessarily mean that the whole person should be judged negatively. Everybody is complicated, and everybody has many different factors that contribute to who they are. And the Mishnah is telling us that regardless of what you're looking at in front of you, still, Havidah is called Ha'adam L'chatzchus. Understand that the totality of the person very likely has much, much more that needs to be brought into the equation, and understand that also when you try to judge them, when you undertake, if you need to. Very often we get involved in judgment, no real need to get involved in judgment at all. And so many things that are happening on social media, it's not so crucial for the world that we immediately issue our comments and our feelings. The world will survive if we don't rush to weigh in right away. But when there is a need for judgment, so this becomes a very important principle. And taking it one step further, Rav Chalevi noted that the Mishnah also says that you should make for yourself a Rebbe, you should buy a friend, so to speak, you should acquire a friend, do whatever it takes to have a Chaber, and judge everyone favorably. And Rav Chalevi noted that there is a cohesive message there that we have to appreciate when you judge people that everyone is a factor of many different elements, and was a product rather of many different elements, and the educational context and the social context play a big role in forming a person's stature, and therefore we should understand the importance of a Seilich HaRav. You have to make sure you have a Rabbi, a Seilich HaChaber, and you can go further to make sure that you have a strong Chaber, that you have a social context that supports you, and understand how that plays a role in who people are, and therefore having done it's called Adam L'chatzchus, recognizing the importance of this. We also have the idea that if we judge others favorably, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges us favorably, and that's a huge idea, and some explain that that's necessary not just because of Mida Keneged Mida, but maybe it's a type of Mida Keneged Mida, because we need to be able to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ways to the extent that we can. So if we have an attitude that people need to be judged in their totality and that the good parts need to be considered also, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu can treat us the same way and we'll appreciate that that's also good. But if we don't have that attitude towards others and then we expect that God will treat us that way, if He does, it's just going to seem like He just has no standard, like He doesn't have any actual din. But if we could understand that din could also incorporate that, that that's a part of what din means, so then we'll be capable of appreciating it if HaKadosh Baruch Hu treats us the same way, and that becomes a possibility. Okay, so much to say about that. We have to get at least to the second pasuk. And the second pasuk could equally take us so many hours. It's one of the many sources for Lashon Hara, and it's just half a pasuk. And we could talk Lashon Hara all day. There is endless amount to say about this. And you're going to really have to try to do some triage here. Ba'lo Selech, Rochel B'Yamecha, Lo Tamod, Al Damreyecha, Ani Hashem. So here, so much to say. Okay, Lo Selech, Rochel B'Yamecha is the leading candidate for the prohibition of Lashon Hara. There are actually many sources for the prohibition of Lashon Hara. Chafetz Chaim, in the beginning of the Sefer, lists many, many different positive and negative mitzvos that one could potentially violate when speaking Lashon Hara. Some of them are broader or more circumstantial, but even just the basic Isser, there are a number of candidates. One of them is actually Gemara and Avi Pesachim. We're hoping still to get to that. We'll have to try to find time to talk about that also. The Gemara and Avi Pesachim points to a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim. But here, this pasuk, L'Selech Rachel B'Yamecha, is the most often quoted idea of the source for a prohibition of Lashon Hara. Rachel is not easy to translate, and if you look at the four different English translations, you'll probably find four different words completely as to what a Rachel is. Something like a peddler, or a salesman, or a talebearer, very different translations as to what exactly a Rachel is. But the imagery is you should not walk around as, you should not travel as somebody who likes to bring stories here and there, and likes to tell tales. And it's interesting also that in the Gemara, you find Rechilus and Lashon Hara and Limotzi Shem also kind of interchangeable terms, that they all seem to be umbrella terms that cover all the different aspects of negative speech. They're not clearly defined in the Gemara as one type or the other, and you have some contrary indications. If you look very hard, you might be able to find some clues in the Gemara's usage that they have one kind of connotation or the other. But we do in our usage nowadays, based on the language of the Rambam and then of the Chafetz Chaim, that they have categorized these in different ways. Lashon Hara and Motzi Shemra and Mechilos are three different types. And that Mechilos is basically really different than Lashon Hara the way the Rambam and the Chafetz Chaim understand it, that it's not about disparaging someone, it's about telling someone what was said about them. So you go up to Reuven and say, Shimon is saying bad stuff about you. That's Mechilos. And the idea seems to be that the issue is not as much disparagement, but that you're provoking fights. People are going to get angry at each other because you tell them what is being said about them. And the truth is, the Rambam doesn't actually make it clear that that's what you're sharing, that you're sharing material that was said about them. He just says that you're telling people what's being said. You're just sharing the stories. And the Kesef Mishnah understands that he must mean what's being said about them, because the whole issue is you're going to rile people up, you're going to get them angry, so they're only going to be riled up if it's personally relevant to them. So presumably that's what he means, that you're telling stories about what's being said about them. While when it comes to Lashon Hara and Motzi Shemra, so that's more about disparagement and about saying what somebody else did or is or what you think about them. That's when you get into Lashon Hara and Motzi Shemra. And the distinction that emerges from the Chafetz Chaim and the Rambam is that Motzi Shemra is false, what we call slander in legal terms, and that Lashon Hara is actually true. I think the difference sometimes gets overstated, and it's important not to put too much into that kind of a grade school sense. I'm sure you've all seen sometimes, because you learned this distinction in school, so if somebody accuses you of speaking Lashon Hara, or the kids accuse each other of speaking Lashon Hara, so then they respond, oh, so you just admitted it's true, because if it wasn't true, you'd call it Motzi Shemra, you just confessed. So I don't think the distinction is meant to be as absolute as that, and it's not even clear in the earlier sources if that really is the distinction. Echemet and others talk about how the Rambam came up with these categories, but it certainly seems from Chazal to the Gemara that Lashon Hara is either false or contains falseness, and I think to the extent that there is a distinction, what we really mean is that Motzi Shemra is pure fiction. You make up something out of thin air that is just a total fabrication, while Lashon Hara is also false, or potentially false, but in a different way, meaning that it has truth as a foundation, but it's false in the sense that it's incomplete, or it's subjective, or it's somewhat of a distortion, so it's not the absolute blatant falsehood of Motzi Shemra, but we shouldn't give it too much credit for being true either. It's certainly clear from the language of Chazal. And I think it's also a big part of why we have a prohibition of Lashon Hara, because there are many reasons, but it always bothers people that if something is true, why shouldn't I be able to say it? We spoke about this a little bit last week with the Tzria Metzorah. We spoke about the Medrash there, which there's a lot of overlap to this topic. But the idea that there's a prohibition of saying something that's true, part of the concern is that it's not fully true. Now, this certainly flows very much from the previous pasuk and the issues of Amach HaSos, we just said a minute ago, about having gone as Kol HaAdam, that you could say something which is factual, but is very possibly not actually telling the truth, not actually creating an accurate picture. So it wouldn't make too much of the distinction, doesn't have really much of a distinction of the halacha. You know, certainly Motzi Shemra in the absolute sense is worse, has an even more damaging and unfair effect than Lashon Hara, but there isn't really a nafkamina between the two in terms of the definition, so I wouldn't overemphasize this distinction between Lashon Hara and Motzi Shemra, and it's not clear there that we have different makaros for two different concepts, and that they are that different at all, and that one way or another you're saying something that creates an unfair image. And even if it's factual, it either does or has the potential to disparage someone in a way that is disproportionate or unfair or maybe completely false. And that's clearly a very severe prohibition. And obviously a lot more to say about this, but just one issue we discussed with someone this week. So many assume that the protection of Lashon Hara does not extend to non-Jews. It's only given to the Jews, and that's what the pasuk says. So we know that Amecha is very often a limitation talking about the Jewish people only. So there are those who read it that way, that it sounds like Amecha is referring to the Jewish people, but to assume that that means there's no prohibition of Lashon Hara for non-Jews is not necessarily the conclusion, that there's a lot of basis, a lot of sources to indicate that at least on some level there is a concern of Lashon Hara when speaking about non-Jews as well. It's something that we should take into very serious consideration, and I think it also impacts our attitude, among other things, but also part of our attitude towards the damage that's caused by racism. That if you talk about individuals, you talk about groups of people in a way that's unfair, it's all included in Lashon Hara. So why should you assume that it's not limited to Jews if the language is Amecha? So, first of all, as Reuven Schwartz points out in the Sefer Be'emek HaLashon, Be'emek HaLashon, very fascinating Sefer of Lashon Hara, that the Ramban over here doesn't understand Amecha to refer to the subject. And it's not the people who you're talking about, it's the people you're talking to. That you shouldn't tell stories among your nation, you shouldn't go around from person to person. It's a big part of the imagery that the Rochel takes the story from here and goes there, he's traveling around, he likes the telling of the stories, he likes the peddling of the gossip. So the Amecha is not talking about who you're hurting, it's talking about your audience. So therefore it doesn't necessarily have to create that exclusion. And especially also, if you understand that there's an aspect of Hezek here, and that's also a point that Reuven Schwartz observes in that safer over there, that it could be that even if you do want to say this pasuk is talking specifically only about Jews, maybe that's talking about Rechilus. We just saw that Rechilus and Lashon Hara have different aspects to it. So Rechilus is about starting fights in your community, but Lashon Hara could be about Hezek, and Hezek is a much broader idea. The Meshech Chachma, the next one's Parsha, the Parsha's Emor talked about how that's a universal idea. So the notion of Hezek, that by itself could apply to everyone. And Shester Shlita in his shiur, he also emphasizes that as far as a Lashon Hara that really impacts negatively, really creates damage, that even assume should apply to everyone. That should be a concern, that you shouldn't want to damage anyone with your speech in a significant way, simply as a function of the idea of Hezek. And on top of that, so there's a medrash that says that speaking Lashon Hara about anyone is going to lead you to speak Lashon Hara more, and that's going to be a problem. And the portion there, the Radal, and others, they understand that there is an issue of Lashon Hara that is universal. And that's what the Rush writes also. The Rush in his Sefer Orchaz Chaim writes that you're not supposed to speak Lashon Hara al Shum Briya by any person, any creation, really, that there is such an issue. And Reb Chaim Kanievsky, as a commentary to the Rush, he understands that this is an actual issue in and of itself. He says it's probably not issue the right thing, because he does understand Bamecha as a limitation. It's at least a Nisr Darabanan. Others understand it as a Mida Isser, which is also a significant Isser, and the minimum is a value. So there are many, many sources that indicate that there is a concern in speaking in an unfair way and bringing about potential disproportionate harm, no matter who you're talking about. And the Tshuva Sataris Paz, so he points out also based on the Ragachavar, that the Ragachavar, sorry, the Kajaglava Rav, this picture is on the wall in 5A, Fihar Shrimmer, the Kajaglava Rav has a tshuva where he assumes that Bnei Noach also have a prohibition of nipple pet. It's a very big problem for contemporary society, if that's the case. Likely is the case if they have an issue of nipple pet also. He thinks maybe Lashon Hara too, because it's all based on midos. This is an issue of character. Therefore, that should apply across the board. So, based on that, Taras Paz writes that, presumably, therefore, it's bilateral. So, to the extent that there is a negative character trait involved, and the extent that there is serious harm being perpetrated by the disparagement, there's a very strong case to be made that the Issur Lashon Hara is applicable to all of humanity, and certainly, as a Mida, it's something that we have to be very, very careful about. And it does tremendous damage, and it's something that connects to this concern of racism and discrimination that is a increasing sensitivity on the world population's part. But, that being said, some of the prohibition of Lashon Hara, but sometimes something does need to be said if there is a positive purpose to it, which is most prominently the case if somebody poses harm. So that's something we spoke about a few minutes ago, talking about the Amachas, that if somebody is a risk to others, so or risk to yourself, so then one is permitted to speak and one is really obligated to speak. And that there is a concept of toilet, that one has to do what's necessary in order to protect himself or others, and maybe even also to bring about a positive effect even without the risk of harm. So that question depends a little bit on how you understand the issue of Lashon Hara. So why is there this exception, or why is this other category when you have a prohibition of Lashon Hara? So why is it offset by anything? So there are two basic ways to understand it. One is to understand that there is a vision of Lashon Hara as an Isra Midos. So if the Mida is to be a nasty gossip, to enjoy speaking the dirt about other people, so that's all when it's purposeless. It's gossip, literally, in English, when it's something that's just, you enjoy the negativity. But if you're accomplishing something positive, if it's motivated by something that is helpful, so then that's not gossip. Maybe that's simply not Lashon Hara in the first place. It doesn't fit the definition. While others understand that, no, it's still potentially Lashon Hara, because let's say if we're focused on the hezek, if we're focused on the negative impact, so even when you're doing it for a good reason, you're still damaging the person you're speaking about. So why is it okay and necessary in those cases? So it could be it's just a competing value, that we also have to protect the innocent, and that sometimes has to take the priority over not disparaging the guilty. So if you're saying something that's true and necessary, the person you're talking about is an actual threat to yourself or others, so then the mandate to protect the innocent is going to override it. And that is especially made clear by the fact that it's the other half of the puzzle, right? So here we see these are two halves of the same puzzle together. And we just said, we shouldn't stand idly by when somebody is at risk. The Rambam of Sefer HaMitzvos understands that language of Losamer al Dam Re'acha is that when a person is at risk, you could think literally it means they're at risk of dying. Well, Dam Re'acha sounds like it means that they're going to die unless you intervene. So that certainly means, but the Rambam understands the Sefer HaMitzvos that it doesn't just mean physical harm, it means harm, spiritual harm, it could be material harm, harm to their money, harm of any kind. And it doesn't have to be absolute like death. It could mean lesser degrees of harm as well. So you have an obligation to step in when you can make a difference. So some understand that that's what the pasuk is conveying to us. The Rambam understands that the pasuk is telling us that Lashon Hara has the ability to do such harm, it's like killing them. So for one idea, but others understand, two sometimes counterbalancing ideas, that you shouldn't speak badly about people, but you should also appreciate that you have an obligation to protect the innocent, and sometimes that's going to be the overriding concern. So that brings up the whole category of Toelos, which has so much to say, but again, we can speak Lashon Hara all day, but it highlights the fact that there's a very serious judgment that has to be brought to bear. So here, the second pasuk here, but this is the same idea you find in the previous pasuk, that we have to be so careful in how we do this, and we have to, I think that's why the whole Chafetz Chaim movement, the whole idea of the past 100 years, has been such a focus on Hilchos Lashon Hara as a very, very expansive learning pursuit, because this really takes a lifetime of judgment to know how to make the right call between these two, because there's no safe side here. You have to really do the best you can to make the best decision to treat people properly and to not disparage someone when it's not justified, but at the same time, not let innocent people be put at risk because you're not willing to speak up when somebody is potentially a predator, somebody is potentially harmful. Chafetz Chaim has a whole list of factors that you have to consider, a whole list of questions you have to ask, Others don't understand it that way. The Chazon Ish understood that really this is one question. Are you doing it with Tuelos? Many others had a process in the middle. But the question of how rigorous the process is, it really goes to this issue. Do we say the Lashon Hara is just about Midos? So if the Midah is to be helpful, that's really the standard. Or is it really that it's going to be harmful either way, and it's only overridden by the real meat to protect somebody from harm, which gives a much more intense process. So clearly, anyone can claim whatever they want and say, well, I'll say whatever I want because it's in the interest of Toelis, or I won't get involved because I'm so firm and so micro and Lashon Hara. So the fact that anyone can claim any defense that they want and make the decision in direction, that doesn't make it right, doesn't make it legitimate. You still have to answer it to God. You're still responsible for the content of our judgment calls and for the quality of our judgment calls. And that's why we spend the whole lifetime honing our judgment, so that we will make judgment calls that are appropriate. And that's, again, so much of what consumed America's attention this week. The ability to judge something fairly in a complex situation is a basic demand of humanity, and we really need to be able to have that attribute, to be able to bring these things into balance, and they're going to be held accountable for it. And that's essentially what the pasuk ends with, that last two words of the pasuk, Ani Hashem, so I am God. So why is that mentioned there? So Rashi here says that I will hold you accountable, but we know also that sometimes when the pasuk all of a sudden reminds you that God is watching, that you should fear God, etc., that the imagery is, the message is, that it's dafka in the context of something where, as far as what human beings know, you can get away with whatever you want. People won't necessarily know what your motives are. People won't necessarily know what you're really thinking. And you can make any excuse. So you're reminded that the erasim lekacha is one which not a psukim, that you should fear God and be aware that God knows, and therefore the fact that your process may not be an honest one or may not be a rigorous one as needed is going to be something that you're going to be accountable for. So especially in this context, you say the first half of the pasuk is telling us not to speak badly about people. The second half of the pasuk is telling us what we have to if they are a danger. So that very tricky and subjective process in trying to decide how to balance those two concerns, so it's easy just to claim whatever answer you want and not necessarily go through the process. So Pasuk tells us in the Hashem that God is watching, and you have to understand just how high stakes this is and just how much you are held accountable to do this in an honest and a rigorous way. So this also flows into the next Pasuk, because I'm not going to be able to accomplish much here, but the next Pasuk says, Leitzisna, so you shouldn't hate someone in your heart. Hate is also a very charged word in contemporary society, and it's taken on many different meanings. They have to figure out what it means. Losisma, different interpretations among the Rishonim as to whether losisma is a feeling of hatred, is a distancing from a person, is it a controlled response as opposed to instinctive response, had opinion fear rights in the tshuva at the lavacha, as opposed to your nefesh. Your nefesh is instinctive, but your lab is a decision, how to feel about someone. So some point out that the language of lavacha, that it means specifically that which is hidden, as opposed to more overt treatment of people, that's in a different category. But to harbor a hatred against somebody that is unspoken is, in a sense, its own prohibition. And maybe that's what we're talking about. So that's where it flows into Hocheach Tofiach, that's in Yisrach, that's what Rishonim understand. That's really one idea, that don't just hate somebody in your heart and keep it to yourself, but you should speak it out. This is because that's what Rishonim understand in the context of the Hal Mechaviru, that if you have an issue with somebody, you should just give them a silent treatment. You should tell them what's bothering you, and you should talk it out, and you should try to resolve it. The whole question of whether there's any type of appropriate hatred. So the Gemara does understand there's an appropriateness of hatred for the Rishayim, but here again, to go to the previous idea, who is called a Rasha, especially the Kohen Hazav, is itself a very, very tricky idea. And there are many, many reasons to assume that nowadays we don't have Rishayim in the same sense. There are people who are actually evil. But the idea of a person being a Rasha because of a single aveira or a about averus. So nowadays, people are not on the same madriga as far as what they are exposed to in terms of God's providence. Last year, we had a very big money in the first parak of Sulim to see inside the Chazon Ish's words about this very, very powerful formulation of the Chazon Ish and the Shlita, that to assume that most people would be considered a Russia nowadays for theological reasons, for reasons of religiosity, is something that is very hard to say nowadays that should be true. And it's also relevant to the flow here, if you assume that that's a reference to the Nadal and Makom Tosacha. So we have to also understand that people need to be taught how to do the right thing. And the Gemara says in Erchim, like by the Lashon Hara Sugya, that nowadays, meaning even a day, it's ready to tell you the Gemara, nobody knows how to do Tochacha anymore. Nobody knows how to effectively reprove people. And some understand that the Chafetz Chaim quotes the end of the Sefer Abba Chesed. We went to Abba Chesed this year. If we read this inside, we got to the end of Magen Yisrael Tav, the end of the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, the end of the Sefer Abba Chesed. The Chafetz Chaim quotes this idea, we did it together, that you need to be able to have received Tochacha in order to have a status of a Rasha. That a person can only be considered really defiant if he has received this kind of reproach, and he defies it. But nowadays, we don't know how to do it effectively. We don't know how to do it effectively, so it's not something that can even get triggered. And we have to also appreciate that. And in any event, even when sinah is appropriate, so the Gemara seems to have somewhat of a conflict there, because the Gemara is also very relevant to some of the themes in this parasha here, that the Gemara talks about trying to overcome your sinah. So, shown and discussed, so why was there sin in the first place? Perhaps the person was a sinner, and yet we're still told to overcome the sinah. So, which is it? So, the Ketos discusses this in Rosh Balatanya. Balatanya and Parag Lamed understands, based on courses, based on the language there, that, like they say, you should hate the sin and not the sinner, that there is a bifurcation to be made for the individual itself and for the avera. So the sinner should be directed maybe at the avera, but not at the person. And if they suggest, that's what tosis means. Tosis distinguishes between a sinner gemura and a lesser sinner. So sinner gemura is the sin of the person. To hate the person, so sinner gemura, so we want to make sure that you shouldn't come to. But if you hate the Avera, that's going to be separate and distinct from the person, and you have to try to help them see the light. That's what the Chayach Tosiyach means. But the Gemara also says that Kishem Shemitzulay Medaber HaNishma Tach Mitzulaylam HaDaber She'en Nishma, same way it's a mitzvah to say something that's going to be effective, it's also a mitzvah not to say what's not going to be effective. That's a part of knowing how to do it and part of understanding what exactly is involved. Very, very tricky. And interesting, the Gemara also has a lesson that a few may have that even if you have to do it 100 times. So Bakshi Daron, who was the Sari Chief Rabbi of Israel, he passed away this year from Corona, also one of the losses to Corona. So Bakshi Daron suggested that the reconciliation of those two lines, that you shouldn't say something that's not going to be heard, but you should say even 100 times. So you have to say it 100 times, so then wasn't heard the first 99 times. So what does that mean? That how could those both be true? So he suggested that what it means is that it's all going to how you have to be able to convey your message. That you should say it in such a way that even if you said it 100 times, you wouldn't be irritated to the person. That you would be able to continuously have an impact and continuously get through to the person, and you're not going to get them angry at you. So that's what it means. All one idea, you have to be able to have that touch to say a Dabar HaNishma. So it's not easy. And that's also something which maybe we're not even on that level to do at all. And that's going to have whatever implications it has. Plus again, that you should not be in trouble because of him. So one could read that as one idea in that sense, that we have interpersonal responsibility for what everyone else is doing, and that if somebody else is sinning, so that if we could have stopped it, then we don't stop it, so it's our responsibility. You should not fail to stop a injustice from happening. If you do, it's your fault. It's also something that has tremendous relevance to us as a society. But the Gemara Nechon also has a different understanding, a very important other understanding, that the Yochel Afilu Yishtan Eponav, might think that you should be mochiach somebody, even if it means that their face is going to change color, they're going to be humiliated. So the pasuk says, "Lo yisvisu l'chayt," you should not get yourself in trouble because of this. That if your tochacha is done in such a way that it humiliates people, so then you're doing more harm than good, and then that's not going to be acceptable. So this is actually one of the major sources for the issur of halbanus panecha ve'rabim, the not allowed to humiliate people, and that the style is a style that we sometimes find elsewhere in the Torah. It's kind of the extreme, and you can figure out the normal situation, that you're not supposed to, the way Rambam explains it explicitly, that you should humiliate someone even when you have a good reason to be correcting their behavior, even when they're acting in a sinful fashion, and you have to call them on it, still you shouldn't do it in a way that inflicts humiliation. So, kal v'chomer, if you don't have that justification, to humiliate people with no motive is for sure prohibited. But even when you have this presumed justification, it's also you have to be very careful not to humiliate again. This is also a current trend that people are very quick to feel it's their obligation to humiliate others, to call out people under whatever standards they deem to be appropriate. You're playing with fire here. There's a very, very severe consideration here as far as how the tochacha should be conveyed. And clearly, there are people who are endangering others who need to be embarrassed in order to stop doing so. But the justification is going to be a very, very high threshold. You have to be really very careful. That's also one of the major messages of the Yisrael Chay. So I'll just take a few minutes to say, we'll just do one more pasuk, but the pasuk is a doozy. It's a real doozy. We can't neglect it. So just to say a few words about Losika, the Losikers, Me'anacha, Be'av, Le'acha, Kalocha, Ani Hashem. So you should not take revenge, you should not bear a grudge, and you have Tarecha Kamoch. Okay, so this pasuk alone really needs hours and hours and hours. You have Tarecha Kamoch, we know, is not a normal pasuk. It's a pasuk that has appropriately an outsized importance. And Rabbi Akiva famously declared, and we are very focused on Rabbi Akiva and his lessons during Sfiras HaOmer, that's what this whole kufa is about. Rabbi Akiva famously declared, "Zek Klal Gadol b'Torah," this is a great principle in the Torah. And the Sefer HaChinuch explained that it doesn't mean it's a big mitzvah. He's not saying, "Oh, Gadol b'Torah, that's a good one. That's a good mitzvah." It means that Klal Gadol b'Torah, this is a Klal. This is a ideal and a principle that we can derive so many other things from. So this is very much all the surrounding psukim are taking energy from this idea of Yahav Karecha Kamocha, and it's the Yisod, which teaches us a lot about everything that we do in interacting with others. So, we clearly can spend forever talking about it, but first even just the opening words of the pasuk, that the Losikom Losithor, you should not take revenge, you should not bear a grudge. So that seems to evoke very dramatic pictures of vigilante justice. What does that mean? You shouldn't take revenge or bear a grudge. Yet the Gemara in the Maseches Yuma actually has a surprisingly mundane interpretation. It's not talking about hunting down somebody who hurt you. It's talking about, let's say you wanted to borrow something from somebody, and he says no. So then tomorrow he comes to borrow something else from you, and you say no because he didn't lend to you yesterday. So the Gemara says, that's nekama. That's revenge. And what is Losithor, bearing a grudge? That same scenario, but here you do lend it to him, but you say to him, yeah, because I'm not like you. You wouldn't lend me what I needed yesterday. I'm better than you. I'm going to lend it to you. That's called bearing a grudge. So there's a lot to discuss about that. And especially about that distinction, you know, so what happens to the more dramatic kinds of vengeance? So the Sefer Yad HaKtana points out that there are things in the Torah, both societally and as individuals, that do seem to be vengeful. It do seem to be within the spirit of retribution and acting against people who have hurt you. And he suggests, yeah, that's the whole point, that the Torah identifies what is important enough for there to be that kind of retributional justice. But anything below a certain threshold, we're supposed to appreciate, is not worth it. And that's up to the point of this mundane example, is to say that if this is what we're telling you, this is not something that should consume. And it's interesting to note that the Rambam and Sefer HaChinuch don't seem to find this distinction, that the Gemara says only about these kind of property issues. And the Gemara actually says, Tairi de Gufa, that if it's a personal offense, there actually you're allowed to take revenge. We don't recommend it, the Gemara says, that it's where you have the idea of and I love the that if people attack you and you're able to hold it in, you're able to not respond. That's a tremendous bracha. Above Ketayt Hashem Shkutaraso, Mark quotes. But nonetheless, is that no isser of Mekimu Nadira when it comes to personal anguish. So that's the language of the Gemara. The Rambam, if Rechinas don't bring that distinction, it could be that there are other Yersos and other Divrei Chazal that may justify passing in a different way. But it also goes to the Tamei HaMitzvos, because it's also consistent with how they understand it. So why is there this isser in the first place? So the Rambam understands that essentially it's going to lead to society collapsing. If everybody bears a grudge, and if everybody is going to want to take revenge over every little offense that somebody does to them, like the Anak Tana says, and below a significant threshold, things that aren't so important, they're going to feel like they have to keep score for everything. It's a Gemara language of Avir, Kalam Avir, Amidosa. Rashi explains in Hashanah, it means that they don't keep score, that they're not counting all of the debts that they have of collecting revenge against people. So if you have that mentality that you have to keep score and you have to remember everything, so then you get the Haskells and the McCoys. You have people going after each other and killing each other, and all of society falls apart. So if that's the reasoning, so you can see why he's not really distinguishing between different types of offenses. It's all the same idea, as long as it's in that kind of realm. While the Sefer Achinuch has a different understanding, that basically it's a distraction, that whatever happens to you in this world is happening for some reason. Whether it's an Omesh, or whether it's an Isayun, or whether it's all for the best, or whatever it is, whatever is happening for some kind of reason. And to obsess over the human shaliach, over the human being who happens to be the vehicle for whatever is happening to happen, and to let that take over your attention, you're going to miss the point. It's going to be a distraction from whatever it is that you're meant to appreciate and to understand from this life circumstance. So, therefore, one should not focus on that. Should try to grow in whatever way they can from whatever experience it is they're undergoing. But the Sefer Yireyim, Leizim and Metz, has a different approach, which does work with the Gemara's distinction of focusing specifically on these property ideas, that we have a notion, it's like the rest of the Pasuk, the Hatzarecha Kamoch is one of the major sources for Chesed. We have an obligation to help people out and to try to be of assistance. And so you might think, okay, why should I help him? He doesn't deserve it. He didn't do anything for me. I needed something yesterday. He didn't help me. Why should I help him today? So that's what the Pasuk is emphasizing. No, lo sikol v'lo sitar t'me'amecha. But rather, we have to look at Kamosa, so you should try to help people the way you would want to be helped, even if they didn't do it for you. And that's really the whole process. And that's why the Gemara is giving us this somewhat mundane example of, he didn't lend you something, he didn't carry a grudge, because that's what the context in which we're talking about, that you should be helpful to people, and you should try to do so, even if they don't necessarily seem to deserve it. So that's also perhaps a major aspect there. So all of this also speaks to the unity of Klal Yisrael as well. The Yerushalmi and the Darim understand that the idea of Losiko Losittor, he says, imagine if somebody would accidentally hit his head with his hand, his own hand. So is he going to take revenge against his hand? Is that going to leave him better off? It makes no sense. It's going to have a hurt hand also. So too, if you see Klal Yisrael as one entity, it's interconnected. So you realize that the idea of trying to take revenge over these things is not going to really be too wise. It's not going to make too much sense. So there's a lot more to say about this whole idea of Nekima Natira, and also the relationship of Nekima Natira. Maybe we'll try to find some time on Sunday to try to fill in some more about this, because there's just so much more to say about what the Nekima Natira involves and the relationship between the two. It also draws upon some things we've been talking about until now. It's one for the sake of the other. So it sounds like from the language of the Rambam that really the issue is Nekima, that you should actually take action against somebody else. And the Torah prohibits keeping a grudge and remembering it, because that will lead to taking revenge. That if you keep focusing and obsessing about it, so then you're going to end up harming society with the acts of vengeance that you take. So it sounds like this might be yet another example of what we've talked about a lot in the Siach Manhatorah, that maybe it's the Isra Manhatorah that's really there for the sake of its next word, previous word, that we shouldn't come to take revenge, you shouldn't bear a grudge, which will lead to that. The Rav Kook understood the exact opposite, that the whole thing is about Midos, it's all about how you relate to others and to what happens to you, and to allow yourself to take revenge is going to be mechazek to the tira, is going to make it even more a reality of how you think, and that's also something that very much have to try to work on. And then v'yahavta re'echa kamocha, again, hit the whole world there, and the Rambam understands that v'yahavta re'echa kamocha is the source for the mitzvah of chesed, together with the idea of alachta b'drocha. We have two different tracks in which we are enjoined towards acting with chesed, and one of them is v'yahavta re'echa kamocha. A lot of the Rishonim have a problem with this, a problem with the idea that v'yahavta re'echa kamocha means anything positive, because you have to figure out what the word kamocha means. Right, that kamocha means that to the same degree as you do yourself. So to say v'yahavta kamocha requires you to do something, and you should do it to the same degree that you do for yourself. It's physically impossible. Nobody can do that for even one other person, let alone for everyone else. So some understand that you have to reformulate it like the Gemara in Shabbos does in the Hillel as a negative. What some call, in general philosophy, they call this a silver rule as opposed to the golden rule, that the negative formulation, don't do to others that which you don't want done to yourself. So that's the standard you could live by. Okay, so you're careful not to do things to others you don't want done for yourself. To say it's a positive, that you have to do stuff for other people that you would do for your own self, it's impossible. How could that possibly be? But nonetheless, that's how the Rambam understands, that it's a directive of positive behavior, acting the chesed. You have to understand what kamocha means. So it could mean that kamocha is what you want, that you want certain things for yourself, and you want it for others also. So it's not necessarily physically possible for you to provide it for others, because there are limits, but that might mean two things. It might mean that you won't actively stop people from having what you want for yourself. That would be a contradiction to v'yahavta re'echa kamocha. And it would mean that, yes, it's impossible for you to do things to the same degree, but to whatever extent it is possible, you would do. So it would create an aspirational standard also, that if we focus on the want and the v'yahavta, that what you want for yourself, because you love yourself, so therefore you will want this for others too. So therefore, A, you're not going to get in their way, if you can avoid getting in their way, and B, that if it does, the circumstance does come up, that you can do chesed for them, it is within the realm of possibility, so you'll take all the opportunities to do that. Maybe that's the idea of v'yahavta re'echa kamocha. So obviously, there's a lot still to figure out about how that plays out, and so on. Sliding scale, the very striking Gemara Maseches Kiddushin that says that you shouldn't send the shliach to take a wife out for you that you don't have any input in because maybe you won't be so happy with her, and the Torah says you have Lorecha Kamocha. So the, putting the two on the same spectrum, saying that the closest relationship you have is part of this mitzvah, you have Lorecha Kamocha, and it's the same mitzvah applies to everyone else. It's a very interesting idea. It shows that it's given to different degrees, that it doesn't apply equally, and that some people get a much more powerful dose of your Abba than others, but that is still connected to the same idea. It's a very, very striking idea. And we'll just close over time, but just a note that just to tie back into what we started with, that the idea of Yehavta Re'echa Kamocha, one of the interpretations, Kamocha, the Ksav HaKabbalah writes, ties into the idea of Zalma Chaschut, that there's something called the fundamental attribution error, which I think is also a part of the logic behind Lashon Hara, that when we see somebody else doing something, so we tend to think that's reflective of their whole character. And yet if we were to do the same thing, we don't think it's really reflective of us, it's circumstantial. So if I see somebody else pushing in front of the line, I say he's a jerk, he's not a nice guy, he pushes in front of the line. But if I were to do it, well, I'm having a bad day, I'm in a big rush, I'm overtime, I've got to just, you understand the circumstances, it's not who I am, it's just what I'm doing right now. So we call that the fundamental attribution error. Now for others, it's what they're about, and for me, it's just a circumstance. So the Ksav HaKabbalah writes that that's also pshat of v'yahavta re'echa kamocha, that because you love yourself, so then when you have to interpret your behavior, you'll always find a way to interpret it positively. You'll always find a way to see it in a good light. So too, you could do that for others also, that when it's not so clear how to see what they're doing positively, but if you love them as much as you love yourself, you'll be able to find a way to do it. You'll be able to find a positive spin, and that's what this imperative is telling you. Also ties into this idea of Zalma Chaschut also being a function of Yehavta Re'echa Kamocha. Yes, on the one hand, so we could have social harmony, and also because the same way, the same generosity of judgment you'll give to yourself, you should also be willing to give to others as well. So I hope you'll be giving me generosity spirit for keeping over time. I wish you all a wonderful Shabbat. So much more to say about these precious, but what can you do? Baruch Hashem, our plate is overflowing. But I wish you all a wonderful Shabbos of elevated Kedusha, Ben Adam Lachem, and Ben Adam Chavero, and look forward to seeing you on Sunday. And it should be only good things. Thank you. Kol Tov.